Sections. First one is found on 1 Samuel 19, verses 1 to 5. That's on 309 of your Pew Bible. And the second reading will be from Proverbs 6, 16 to 17, and that can be found on page 674. First Samuel 19, 1 to 5. Saul tries to kill David. And Saul spoke to Jonathan his son and to all his servants that they should kill David. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David. And Jonathan told David, "Saul, my father, seeks to kill you. Therefore be on your guard in the morning. Stay in a secret place and hide yourself. And I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will speak to my father about you. And if I learn anything, I will tell you." And Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul his father, and said to him, "Let not the king sin against his servant David, because he has not sinned against you, and because his deeds have brought good to you. For he took his life in his hands, and he struck down the Philistines. And the Lord worked a great salvation for all Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood by killing David without cause?" Moving over to Proverbs 6, 16 to 17. "There are six things that the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood." Praise be to God for his word this morning.
The Christian rock band Resurrection Band, or also known as Res, released an album in 1989 entitled Innocent Blood. And the cover of their album is what you see on the screen, a young girl looking through a dirty glass door. And that girl is the reason why they entitled the album Innocent Blood. And I'll read to you their explanation of this from the cover, inside cover of the album. "The small girl staring through the dirty glass door is remembered by us as a friendly yet shy sort of child. Trish lived next door and loved to come over and help serve dinner to our neighbors. One day she was laughing and playing, the next day she had disappeared. Only later did we discover she'd been the victim of a kiddie porn ring. She has never been found. Her family moved away in despair. Trish was the victim of forces not understood by a child's mind. Fodder for someone's perversion. Money for someone's pocket. Innocent blood." Now, if you don't know what a kiddie porn ring is, it's a ring or a group of people who kidnap and abduct children, sexually abuse them, take pictures of it, and sell it. And many of these children will die in that abuse. "There are seven things that are an abomination to the Lord, seven things that he hates. The first we've looked at, haughty eyes, pride. The second, lying lips, deceit. And now we come to the third thing that he hates, hands that shed innocent blood." Notice in that verse the qualifier of the word innocent. There is time when blood should be spilt. God has given governments the ability and the authority to put to death by capital punishment for certain crimes the guilty. There is the case where countries are allowed to defend themselves in war, or there's just war or holy war. where God also allows the taking of life. But it's the taking of innocent life that God hates, that he does not desire or wish to see. David, as you heard read in 1 Samuel 19, did nothing against King Saul. Nothing. Nothing deserving of death. David did nothing even wrong against the king. And Saul ordered all his servants, if you see David, kill him. And only temporarily was Jonathan able to talk some sense into his foolish father. And as it was read, Jonathan said, "Why then will you sin against innocent blood by killing David without cause?" Here are some scriptural examples of shedding innocent blood. I'll give you three. First is Cain killing Abel. Comes very early in the Bible. First book of the Bible, in the fourth chapter, innocent blood is shed. Two brothers, the sons of the first humans, Adam and Eve, they offer their sacrifices respectively, or their offerings respectively. God accepts Abel's, he rejects Cain's. And God said to Cain in Genesis chapter 4, verse 7, he said, "Look, if you had done right, I would have accepted you and your offering. And instead of repenting and doing what is right and offering in faith, Cain becomes very angry, becomes very sullen, and he, in a jealous anger, he releases his hate and his anger upon his brother Abel and murders him. Abel had nothing to do with God's rejection of Cain's sacrifice, or not sacrifice, his offering. And Abel dies. Innocent blood. Another example of innocent blood is King Manasseh of Judah. 2 Kings chapter 21, verses 9 through 16 reveal that it was under this king, Manasseh, that the Jewish kingdom, the southern kingdom of Judah, reached the point of no return. They crossed the line where God says, "That's it. I'm going to destroy you as a nation, and I'm not going to change my mind on this. I'm not going to delay it anymore. Because you have led the people into such great wickedness that I have no other option now but to bring the judgment down upon your guilty heads." And one of the reasons that God gives for this crossover, passing the line of no return, where they are going to be destroyed as a nation and exiled, one of the reasons he gives for that is the shedding of innocent blood. 2 Kings 24, verses 3 to 4 sums it up. "Surely this came upon Judah at the command of the Lord to remove them out of his sight for the sins of Manasseh according to all that he had done, and also for the innocent blood that he had shed. For he filled Jerusalem with innocent blood, and the Lord would not pardon." And then the third example that I want to mention to you about the shedding of innocent blood is the people of Judah themselves. And yes, some of their kings participated in this. But the people of themselves participated in the shedding of innocent blood through the killing, the sacrificing of their own children to various false gods. Psalm 106, verse 38 says, "They sacrificed their sons and their daughters to demons. They poured out innocent blood, the blood of their sons and daughters, whom they sacrificed to the idols of Canaan, and the land was polluted with blood." God specifically told the people of Israel, when he called the Hebrews out of Egypt and rescued them out of Egypt and brought them to Mount Sinai and gave the law to Moses, he specifically said to them in Deuteronomy, "That's the way the wicked Canaanite nations, the pagan nations, worship their gods. Don't do that. I abhor this. I hate this. I don't require of this." Deuteronomy 12:31, "You shall not worship the Lord your God in that way. for every abominable thing that the Lord hates, they have done for their gods. For they even burn their sons and their daughters in the fire to their gods. And yet the irony is, a few hundred years later, the people of Israel, God's own chosen people, are slaughtering their children, their babies, their youth, to these to Yahweh, thinking that's what will make him happy, that will please him. They take this abominable thing and they use it as a method to worship God. And there's lots of other examples of innocent blood being shed in the scriptures. Those are just three. How may we avoid this horribly defiling sin? What are some of the roots that will, if we do not take care to rip these things out of our lives? What are some of the paths, if we are careful, that we must not walk on that would end in the shedding of blood? Well, there's a number of them: anger, hate, pride, idolatry, fear, coveting, and jealousy. Let's just look at two of them. First, anger and hate. Genesis 4:5 revealed that upon God's rejection of Cain and his offering, Cain became angry, and he expressed his anger by killing Abel. Deuteronomy chapter 19, verses 4 to 5, mentions accidental killings, and it distinguishes them from premeditated murders. So it gives an example of two men chopping wood, and an axe head accidentally flies off and hits another man and kills him. He says this type of killing is an accidental killing. It's to be distinguished from killing where someone thinks it through and plans in hate to murder or to take someone's life. So Deuteronomy 19, verse 11 and 13 says this: "But if anyone hates his neighbor and lies in wait for him and attacks him and strikes him fatally so he dies, your eye shall not pity him, but you shall purge the guilt of innocent blood from Israel, so that it may be well with you." So hatred is one route or one path that ends in the shedding of innocent blood. Now, people say, well, yeah, there's a distinction. There's a distinction between hating someone and actually physically killing someone. Well, yes, there is a distinction, but it's just merely a distinction of degree of action. It's not a distinction of intent or desire. Jesus warned us in Matthew 5, 21 and 22. He says, just because you haven't actually physically murdered someone doesn't mean that you are exempt from condemnation, that you are exempt from judgment, that you're exempt from hell. He says, if you hate, if you have contempt for another, if you insult others, that brings you under judgment, that brings you under the condemnation and threat of hell, just as if you had physically murdered them. Now, yes, few of us will go so far as to actually physically murder somebody. But each of us has expressed our anger, our contempt, our insults towards others, and our despising of other people in actions that cuts apart their life, that destroys the quality of another person's life. We have a phrase, to cut a person to pieces with our tongue. You might not have grabbed a knife and literally cut them to pieces, but we do it with our tongue. We cut apart their reputation and destroy a person by our unkind acts towards them. The Apostle John, after saying we should not be like Cain who murdered his brother, writes in 1 John 3:15, "Everyone who hates his brother is a murderer, and you know that no murderer has eternal life in him." In other words, one who continually hates is acting just like a murderer, taking extinguishing life of the other, destroying the quality of the life of another in some way. So that's the first pathway, a dark pathway that leads to the shedding of innocent blood. Another one is fear. There's another pathway that leads to the shedding of innocent blood. Many people who have thought, I'd never murder, when afraid, very quickly found themselves having committed murder, having shed innocent blood. Very quickly, when people find out that someone else knows their guilty secret, will kill to keep that secret quiet. When someone else finds out about a wrongdoing, very quickly, that innocent person is killed, so that that wrongdoing, it remains hidden, unexposed. Fear of being exposed can motivate us faster than we realize to shed innocent blood. Think about King David. You read about that part, and you know the story of King David, where for a decade or more, he was chased all over the countryside by Saul. Again, David had done nothing wrong. And Saul was hounding him purposely to kill him. And even when David had the opportunity to kill Saul and put an end to it, David did not. He said, I refuse to do this. I will not stoop to that level. I won't kill Saul. And so you think David would know something about being innocent blood and what it's like to be hounded and sought your death and his death sought. You think he would be able to empathize with people who have been innocently murdered. Yet, when David got word from his adulterous fling with Bathsheba that he got her knocked up, what did David do? He acted very quickly to cover up his adultery and the fact that he was the father by having murdered the husband of Bathsheba, a loyal servant who was away fighting his wars. How fast did he shed innocent blood? Did he not learn anything from the time of running from Saul? But how fast did he switch and change and fall into shedding innocent blood? It boggles the mind when we want to think about it. How could the ancients kill their children? How could they sacrifice, burn them to death, or cut their throats to these false gods? But when we think about our contemporary situation in Canada and the Americas, Canadians and Americans are doing the very same thing. We are sacrificing our children to false gods. They're different gods, but they're false gods, and we are killing the innocent for these gods. President Obama, on the 36th anniversary of Roe versus Wade, and that was a court case, a landmark case in the U.S., where the unborn babies were declared non-persons and abortion restrictions were removed. President Obama in 2009, on this anniversary, made these remarks in a speech commemorating that court case. I remain committed to protecting a woman's right to choose. On this anniversary, we must also recommit ourselves more broadly to ensuring that our daughters have the same rights and opportunities as our sons, the chance to attain a world-class education, to have fulfilling careers in any industry, to be treated fairly and paid equally for their work, and have no limits on their dreams. That is what I want for women everywhere. Now, he says there are some good things that every woman should have: equal pay, equal right to go and study, to have whatever job she's capable of doing. But in the context of this speech, he's saying, if you're in an educational situation and you're working on your postgraduate degree and all of a sudden you find yourself pregnant and it wasn't planned, well, don't let that pregnancy, don't let that baby stop you. Slay it and go on with your education. Oh, if you're climbing the career ladder and all of a sudden you got this unplanned pregnancy, well, don't let that stop you. Don't let that limit you. Eradicate it. Don't let any of your dreams be stopped because of this life in your womb. Kim Floden, staunch defender of abortion, has had two herself. She admits, with all the blood and all the pain and all the injury and all the infection that comes with abortions and all the guilt, she says, I'd do it all over again, she says. Why did she abort two of her children? She says, and I quote, I chose for completely selfish reasons to deny them life so that I could better my own. Floden had her children killed because she determined she was the goddess. That she had other things to do. Other things more valuable than the life within her. John Enzer has established crisis pregnancy care centers to aid women with unplanned and crisis pregnancies so that they do not have to abort, so that their babies may be saved and their babies may be adopted or they may be helped and they may be told all the different options that they have and how they can make it through. Sums up the current national situation of Canada and America in his book, Answering the Call, Saving Innocent Lives One Woman at a Time. He writes, we no longer sacrifice our children to please some pagan, bloodthirsty god like Moloch. We have made ourselves into a god and sacrifice our children for our own ends. We abort because of money, believing we cannot afford a child and do the other things we want to do with our money. We abort to save ourselves the embarrassment of others discovering our promiscuity and to save our reputations. We abort to save relationships or educational and vocational goals we have planned. The ultimate reason we abort is selfishness and a lack of faith in God. That's hard to hear, but it's true. This is the state of Canada. We are no better than the ancient Israelites. We are just as guilty as a nation of shedding innocent blood. Are you aware? Some people may not be, some of you may not be aware that since 1988, Canada has had no abortion law whatsoever. Don't stick your nose up in the air at the Americans as they continue to debate about abortion law and their politics. They actually do have a couple of restrictions. We have none. A baby in the womb can be killed at any time, at any stage in this country. And that has been going on since 1988. With the exception of New Brunswick and Prince Edward Island, across Canada, in all hospitals and private clinics, this shedding of innocent blood is fully funded with your and my tax dollars, to the tune of about $75 million a year, and that is a low estimate. That only covers the abortion procedure itself. It doesn't cover any of the other health care issues that come afterwards because of injury, infection, counseling that is needed. In the latest year on record, 2010, and this is something that tells you something, when the latest year on record is 2010, 6 years ago, it means the government and the abortion clinics are not really wanting to release data. if that's the oldest year we can get. They wanted to keep stuff hidden from us. But that year, the statistics reported were 64,641 abortions in 2010. That number is incorrect. It's too low. That's not accurate because it doesn't include abortions from Quebec, and BC only has voluntary reporting. The number's much higher. The number given from 1974 to 2010 in terms of how many children have been aborted in these years is almost 3.2 million abortions. What's the population of Canada? 37 million, something like that? We should have 40 million people in our country. We just eliminated 3 million of them. To make that number, 3 million, a little more understandable, I want you to think of the entire population of Guelph, Cambridge, Kitchener, Waterloo, and Hamilton. Send in the army around all these cities and kill every resident of all those cities. Fill the city up again with population, kill them all again, do it a third time, and that's how many babies we have aborted in Canada since 1974 to 2010. We've wiped out Guelph, Cambridge, Kitchener, Waterloo, and Hamilton, the entire population, three times. The Guelph and Area Right to Life Association in Guelph notes that in Wellington County, 2009, 14% of all pregnancies, 63% of teen pregnancies, have sadly ended in abortion. In a congregation the size of ours, there's likely some of you who have had abortions. Maybe at the time you didn't know your options. And if you knew your options, you would have chosen very differently. Perhaps you were forced into it. All the men around you, all your people around you told you you have to have it. And you didn't want to. Perhaps men, some of you, pressured your girlfriend or your wife or your daughters to have abortions and you paid for it. Instead of standing up for life, you paid for it to die. You know the evil that has been done, and your conscience has pummeled you mercilessly. I say these things not to make you feel worse, nor to rehash a horrible event of the past. But I say these things so that you may know that you can find true forgiveness. Even though this is something that God hates, He can forgive you. He can take away that guilt, and only He can take away that guilt and that stain that is upon you. No one else can get rid of it. No one else. Only He can. He is so gracious. He is willing to forgive and bring healing for your part in shedding innocent blood. He forgave David, didn't He? Jesus Himself even uttered on the cross, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they did or what they're doing." Jesus was a case of the shedding of innocent blood. Upon confession and repentance of wrong, any wrong, even this, you can be forgiven. You can find healing and wholeness again. Caring pregnancy care centers do offer post-abortion counsel, both for fathers and for mothers. And I would be more than willing to help you get connected. I mentioned this today so that, first of all, those of you who have been laboring under this terrible situation and offense may find forgiveness, may know that there is healing. I secondly mention this to rebuke those of you who think that abortion is okay. No, God hates the shedding of innocent blood. How dare we call it an option, a choice? Oh, there's lots more to talk about, which I will not. You know, about how human life is there's a sanctity of human life. God gives that to every person. And then there's the biological stuff. Life begins at conception, not at birth. If you think that abortion is okay, you need to do your study of the scriptures and the studies of biology. You will see that it is not. And the third reason I mentioned this morning is to shake us all to action. As a country, we are guilty. Horrendously guilty. And we need to support crisis pregnancy care centers and other organizations like Ramah House. They fight and labor against the demonic deception and the cultural and legal prejudice of this country that seeks to shed innocent blood. These centers promote kind, gracious, and godly solutions to crisis pregnancy centers or crisis pregnancies that honor life, and we need to be behind them. We need to get involved. Problem is, the church lacks power in this. Church lacks power in our society because we're guilty of the same sins. So let us confess them, let us be cleansed, and then, having been forgiven much, let's go to the world with a message of forgiveness and a message of life. Deuteronomy chapter 21, verses 1 to 9, speak about unsolved murders in the countryside. So if there's a body that is found in the countryside in the rural area, and nobody saw the murder, and nobody has any idea what happened there, the Israelites were to find the nearest town. The leaders of that town and the judges of that town were to come and investigate. And if they could not find out who the killer was and bring justice, they were to take a heifer, break its neck, and wash their hands over the neck of this sacrifice and say, "We had nothing to do with this shedding of this innocent blood. And we have done our duty, and we cannot find out who it was." And only if they did that would they, the people and the leaders of that nearest town, be absolved of the guilt of the murder of that person. If they didn't do that, God would leave the cost of the shedding of blood, the guilt of it, among that town. I close with this comment from John Enzer. Israel would still share in the judgment of God if the leaders did not lead the people to openly and jointly renounce the shedding of innocent blood. That's because passive acceptance of murder would immediately coarsen the heart of everyone. With reference to abortion today, we are facing the death of the innocent, and it's diminishing us all. We just don't sense it or feel it. If we as spiritual leaders do not grab our people and lead them to grieve and mourn the loss, then together our hardened hearts will grow even harder. The peace that we feel will not be peace. It will be deadness. Let us pray.